Back together again, you and I chatting it up. Brand new week, Monday style, October 6, 2025 on Connecticut Today. I had some initial thoughts on the show on the possibility of the Trump White House dispatching more National Guard troops to back up ICE agents in many Democratic-leaning cities. Connecticut Inside investigator reporter Mark Fitch dropped by to update the current controversies surrounding PURA, the Public Utilities Regulatory Authority, and Connecticut News Junkie columnist and Substack.com blogger Terry Cowgill stopped by to chat about the start of the Costa Diamantis corruption trial that could see Governor Ned Lamont called as a witness. All right, I have a question that we'll start the week off with this. How about we do this? Because when we get to hot topics here, I always like to ask people to think about things from other directions. Don't assume, and I try not to do this too when I'm doing a show here or bringing up topics. I try to look at things from different aspects or different directions. Now, number one, everybody has to calm down about Chicago and calm down about Portland, okay? This is not an armed invasion. The White House is not, or what they want to do, they're not invading Chicago. Chicago's got 2.72 million people. That's 2,720,000, okay? A few National Guard troops trying to keep the order for ICE people is not a city takeover. Even though the governor of Illinois, J.B. Pritzker, is using language here that's going to foster resentment and it's going to foster tension. It's not like any National Guard troops are traipsing through the city of Chicago, ordering people here or ordering people there. This is nuts. This is crazy what you're hearing out of the incompetent mayor of Chicago, America's worst mayor, Brandon Johnson, and close to America's worst governor, J.B. Pritzker. But having said that, everybody needs to calm the you-know-what down. Now, let me ask you something here. Maybe you're listening to me and saying, hey, Paul, you know, that notion of having National Guard troops, federal troops in Chicago, I don't like that. All right, now maybe you don't. I'm not saying you have to like it or you have to hate it or whatever. Let me ask you this question. If those troops, the ones being sent to Chicago or to Portland or whatever, are there to back up your son or your daughter or the kid that lived down the street that grew up from you, if they are there to make sure that federal ICE agents are not attacked, are not set upon by protesters in the streets, are you still okay with not having them there? That's a serious question. Because a lot of us can sit here and pontificate about all this, and you can pontificate about all that. Say, well, you know, that's the military invading an American city. No, it's not. No, it's freaking not. Calm down. A couple of hundred military personnel are not going to take over a city of 2.72 million people. They're just not. But what about the stories we had over the weekend, not only in Chicago, but in Portland and in other cities where these protesters are not actually protesting peacefully? They're setting upon ICE agents, whether or not you agree with what ICE is doing. Well, Paul, I don't like what ICE is doing. Well, okay. Does that mean then they should be attacked by people if they don't like the way that they're taking away detainees? It's none of their business. I'm sorry to have to say that, but if you want to protest, fine. If you want to chant, fine. But here's the bottom line. Whether you like it or not, these are federal agents. Now you can have your people in Congress battle this, whatever. Well, Trump's not going to stop. He might not stop. But are you telling me, are you going to sit here at 12 past 2 o'clock on this Monday, on October 6th of 2025, and say that some of these ICE people, these ICE agents, these men and women doing their duty should just be set upon by people? Got kind of hairy over the weekend in Chicago. ICE people getting boxed in. Some woman there was apparently had a semi-automatic weapon. That's why she got shot. That's okay then. You're okay with that. Is that what you're telling me? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. I don't know. The side that keeps saying we need to turn down the rhetoric ain't turning down the rhetoric. Not as far as I can see. Now, they want to go through the courts. That's fine. I'm all for letting the court process play out. The White House doesn't like it. Whatever. No, honestly. Whatever. But my God, everybody just calm down. 500 or 600 National Guard people. I mean, think about that. 500 or 600 Guard people is what? A big church on a Sunday. Maybe a nice big wedding or a couple of weddings. That many National Guard people are suddenly going to rampage through the streets of Chicago? You've got Brandon Johnson, the incompetent, corrupt, worst mayor in America in Chicago there. And you've got J.B. Pritzker, the guy who says, oh, no, I never called Republicans Nazis. The hell you didn't. I got that coming up again later. And there he is using things. He's calling it the Trump invasion or whatever. Are you serious? Come on, Governor, you know better than that, but you know your party right now, for whatever reason, it's getting its ass handed to them. So we start out with, I think, a very pertinent and a very simple question today. A lot of people have responded to it already. Should National Guard forces be sent to any U.S. cities where ICE facilities and personnel are being threatened and or attacked? Now, again, you don't see the White House sending National Guard troops to places that are calm, do you? You don't see the National Guard being sent to here in Connecticut. I know the Bridgeport City Council is grandstanding on this, too. I get it. But everybody's got to calm down here. And bottom line is, if these people weren't setting upon these National Guard troops, or these ICE troops, would the National Guard be there? I don't know. So you tell me, if that's your son or your daughter or your grandson or your granddaughter, stepson, stepdaughter, whatever, and you saw them getting attacked by protesters and you were against the National Guard being used, would you still be against the Guard being used? If it was maybe protecting somebody you loved? Ah, it's not so easy. Would you have the guts to say, well, you know, yeah, that's my son over there getting rocks and bottles and Molotov cocktails thrown at him, but I don't want an extra layer of protection? Oh, really? Really? It's not so easy when you think about it that way, isn't it? Think about it from that direction. But again, simple question to start us off today. Should National Guard forces be sent to U.S. cities where ICE facilities and personnel are being threatened and or attacked? You don't see the Guard going to cities where it's nice and calm, do you? Where immigration operations are underway and nobody's going nuts? They're only going to certain cities and certain states, and pourquoi? I wonder why. And look, a lot of people aren't happy with ICE. I get it. I understand that. They're targeting some blue cities and blue states. I'm not so ignorant that I don't get that. But what are they supposed to do when they get attacked? We saw the attacks over the weekend. They're pretty rowdy outside Chicago in Broadview, Illinois. So they're just supposed to sit there and take that? Why? 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 Because J.B. Pritzker wants to? Why? Because J.B. Pritzker said so? Really? Because Brandon Johnson says so? And listen, I'm not saying you can't debate these things. But come on, you're calling this an invasion? Chicago's got 2.7 million people and a few hundred National Guard people trying to protect the backs of ICE people who are getting attacked. That's an invasion? So if you don't want the National Guard there, then you're okay with the ICE people getting attacked, are you? Sure sounds like it. You don't want the National Guard there? Tell the protesters they can chant and scream and yell all they want, but don't go throwing rocks and bottles and Molotov cocktails and boxing in ICE vehicles. Holy crap. And then that moron Pritzker has got the guts to talk about following the law in a blue city, in a blue state. Oh, my God. You can't script this. You can't script this lunacy. Art in Easton starts us off today. Art, how are you, sir? What's up?
Good, Paul. Love your show. Frequent listener.
Thank you, Art. I appreciate that.
And you always give, you know, a fair and balanced view. You know, I just want to make a couple quick comments, and I'll hang up and listen to your response. But as you know, there's it's never black and white, right?
No.
There's all sides. You know, Trump is saying things like cities, half the cities in America are going to be military training ground.
Mm-hmm.
And we know what half he means, the Democratic-driven ones. And he said it outright. They're going to be military training in America. Both sides are being violent. You know, I don't think the protests, you know, I see ICE spray people, you know, taking people out, dragging them. Now, again, I'm saying there's both sides to mm-hmm. this equation. There's no question about that. But there's too much violence on both sides. Now, National Guards, anyway. And then back to the ICE agents. You know, they were paid $50,000 cash bonus to sign up.
Yep.
We don't know what they're trained in, Paul, but it doesn't look like they're trained in laws. They don't seem to be trained in, you know, how to arrest people, let's say, with due process. So, you know, and again, I'm going to ask you, you got to look at videos, not on the news. Like, I've seen some streaming cameras in Portland, and it's calm as heck. You know, sure, there's maybe one area where people are fighting each other, but I think a lot of it is self-defense, frankly. But again, I'm going to hang up. I know you're a fair and objective person. I think both sides are wrong. It just breaks my heart to see, you know, American citizens being treated this way, or Americans. Whether or not they're citizens, not sure about that. But I just think it's way overboard. Anyway, I'm going to hand up and listen to your...
Well, thank you, Art. Appreciate the kind words there, and I appreciate the thoughts there. And yeah, listen, both sides, listen, this has to be turned way, way down here. Now, there's a couple of things. You said something that is not being talked about enough, is that these new ICE recruits, some of them, not all of them, but some of them, may be in it just for the money, and that's never good. And I think part of the situation here stems from, you know, unanswered questions, as you say, as to exactly what manner of training are these people getting. Is it a scenario of, listen, I'm just doing what I was told to do when I find somebody who is on a list? So you're right. This has never been done before. It hasn't. It has not been done before. I understand that. Now, on the other side, people like J.B. Pritzker, people like Brandon Johnson, I'm sorry, you cannot call 200 or 300 people or 400 people in a city of 2.7 million an invasion. I mean, that's comical. 400 people in a city of Chicago size, that's like an acoustic concert in a small concert venue. So they have to be careful with that. If I was Pritzker and if I was Brandon Johnson, I would say, hey, we don't agree with this. We may not agree with it, but don't do anything dumb, scream and yell and stay away. Now, to what you said, Art, earlier about Trump saying and what he said, which I did not like about using American cities as test ground. Now, he knows he's doing that, and he knows it'll get a rise out of the other side. Because, again, the latest polling showing that the Republican Party is plus 20 on crime and plus 18 on immigration. So he knows exactly what he's doing here. Every bit of bait is taken by the other side. But again, my opening today had to do with people when you see this video and say, well, that's ridiculous. I don't like what ICE is doing. They shouldn't have that extra layer of federal protection. But again, I ask, would you, not necessarily you, the last caller, but you and Moss, would everybody be saying that if they were seeing their sons or their daughters out there working for ICE, whatever, or any branch of a service in the U.S. where, you know, they may be outnumbered? So listen, it's very emotional here. But then again, But then again, would we even be having this discussion if we didn't have a situation for years and years and years and years? The real elephant in the room here, and I know certain politicians tried to fix it and certain presidents to, you know, a certain extent tried to fix it. But again, we never really took seriously the question of whatever phrase you want to use, illegals or undocumenteds in this country, in many big cities, like, in fact, you see what's going on in Chicago. Yeah, but now we like to check in with him every so often. Fitch, check out his stuff at the website, the Connecticut Inside Investigator. Mark Fitch, how are you, sir, this afternoon? What's going on?
I'm doing good, Paul. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thanks, Mark, for making the time. We always appreciate it. Mark Pura, the saga of Pura, the Public Utilities Regulatory Authority that you've been doing some excellent work on for the past few years. Now, Mark, I find it funny that Governor Ned Lamont has been saying over the past few weeks, hey, I can't find anybody to be a Pura commissioner. Now, Mark, at $200,000 a year plus benefits, I'd be happy to step in there. Do you think I could pull it off, Mark? Because according to the governor, this is a really undesirable job here. What's up with that?
Well, he said that it was because of all the negative press around Pura, but it wasn't really negative press around Pura. It was negative press around the former chairman, Marissa Gillette.
Yeah.
That was what the issue was. I mean, prior to her tenure, and even during a good chunk of her tenure, there wasn't really any press about Pura at all. So, I think that that's a little, you know, disingenuous. So there has been negative press about the regulator, but it really, it comes down to more of a personal issue as to who had the chairmanship and was being accused of doing a number of different things.
So now, Mark, we have kind of this stasis of Pura here. It's kind of everything is frozen. Ms. Gillette has announced her resignation here. We still don't have a full Pura board, and yet we have, I guess, the power companies still with litigation here wondering, hey, wait, correct me if I'm wrong on this, Mark. Are they wondering that, hey, could there be past decisions here that could make Mark and should be under legal scrutiny?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, depending on the outcome of these court cases, I mean, it could force a look back on a lot of decisions that mm-hmm. had made against, you know, United Illuminating and Eversource. And yeah, there's only two commissioners at the moment. And not only that, but the utilities have filed a joint motion to have the Pura's general counsel removed as well mm-hmm. From any of the dockets because he was involved in not turning over a particular email and some other documents that they had been seeking. And, you know, he had said they didn't exist. Well, they did. So they've filed to try to get him removed as well. And yeah, there's two, you know, what people have to understand, there's two major court cases going on right now. One mm-hmm. is a rate appeal for Southern Connecticut Gas Company, and the other is the jointly filed lawsuit against Pura by Eversource and United Illuminating. Now, the gas rate appeal is where a lot of the hard work is being done in terms of, you know, trying to subpoena,
yeah.
you know, Representative Steinberg and Senator Norm Needleman and, you know, trying to get at a lot of these documents. And interestingly enough, I have a story coming out about that tomorrow, which
oh, wow.
I don't mind
Good.
Giving you a little preview about.
Sure.
Pura is essentially crunkle in that one, saying, hey, listen, you know, we'll rehear your case. You know, we'll rehear your rate case, and, you know, let's just get rid of all of this. And Avangrid has basically said, no, we still want our depositions. so they are still trying to depose the senator and representative, and they've both filed claims saying that, oh, this is, you know, just trying to intimidate us and all these different things. So I do have a story coming out about that
Excellent.
Tomorrow. It's a little more involved, but it's quite interesting.
And
then with I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Mark. I'm sorry. Finish up. No, I'm sorry.
With the jointly filed lawsuit, the part of that has been dismissed. Like the lawsuit against Pura itself as an agency has been dismissed because due to government immunity, essentially.
Got it.
However, the individuals named in that lawsuit, Marissa Gillette, John Bitkowski, Michael Caron, are all still there. Like that is allowed to move forward. So it'll be interesting to see how that all plays out because, you know, part of it's gone, but the parts involving actually Marissa Gillette and the signatures, the motions that she supposedly approved without technically signing anything, that still has to be played out.
Mark Fitch is here. Great guy. You hear him on the radio station, all the shows from the Connecticut Inside Investigator talking about Pura. And Mark, if you could just recap for people who may have heard but don't fully understand the controversy over Marissa Gillette and the accusations of an op-ed here and whether or not she helped write an op-ed, because some people may hear and say, well, hey, what's wrong with taking part in an op-ed if you're a state legislator? But I guess somebody in Ms. Gillette's position, I guess ethically or maybe legally, should not have done that, allegedly.
Yeah, think of it like this. You know, she's essentially a judge. And if we were in criminal court and a judge wrote an op-ed saying clearly I is guilty and he has a case before that judge, I mean, you'd have, you know, any defense attorney would cry foul and, you know, there'd be a change of venue and that judge would be punished. You're not allowed to do that. She's supposed to act as a, you know, impartial judge as to whether or not the companies should get whatever rates they want to get. So if she was involved in helping draft an op-ed submitted by, you know, Representative Steinberg and Senator Needleman that, you know, made some harsh accusations against the utility companies, claiming that they were colluding with credit rating agencies to, you know, scare people and, you know, fight back against Pura and all this stuff. If she was involved in that, it would show that she was biased against the utility companies. They weren't getting a fair hearing. And that could be a look back all the way to 2019 when she started, you know, because they could make a plausible argument that they've never been given a fair hearing.
Wow.
You know, in all these cases, because she has, you know, participated in this op-ed and shown this animosity and bias towards utility companies.
All right, Mark Fitch. And Mark, you said you had that new piece coming out tomorrow, you said, correct?
Yes, sir.
All right, folks. So listen, you want to get that, the latest investigating on Pura here. It's insideinvestigator.org, not .com, insideinvestigator.org. The always entertaining Mark Fitch. Mark, thank you. Appreciate it. And we'll be in touch, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
All right, there you go. Mark Fitch, M-A-R-C-F-I-T-C-H. Check it out tomorrow, insideinvestigator.org. And there's a story out there now that if anything could possibly harm Governor Ned Lamont, if he does run for a third term, this may be one of the stories, and the Republicans may want to weave this into a narrative about the governor. Hey, he's a nice guy. He's fiscally responsible, but there's kind of an air of certain things in the governor's administration of corruption. It is the Acosta Diamantis trial. Now, he used to be in the governor's budget office. It's a very convoluted thing with school money and maybe allegedly a favor for his daughter with a job. And joining us right now is a gentleman who's been following this in the Connecticut News Junkie. He also writes for Substack.com, our own Terry Cowgill. Terry, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Well, not bad. I'm happy to be. I'm thrilled, actually, to be talking to somebody in the Cadillac of Greenwich Studio.
Yeah. So, thank you. Yes. Yeah. We're still, Chris and I are still working on our complimentary Cadillacs, but we're still trying on that, you know?
I was going to say, I would love to find an auto dealership to build me a podcast studio, and we could have Torrington Honda red meat for mushy moderates podcast.
Well, Terry, you got to get out there. You got to press the flesh and do a deal here. Now, how about this for a segue? Deals, Terry. We have this Costa Diamantis case, which I don't know, Terry, is the governor at risk here now? He says he's waiting to see if he's called to testify. I've talked to people who think that's all for show, that would never happen. But talk a little about this case, and I guess this goes back to, what, some school reconstruction money and all that, right?
Yeah, so Costa Diamantis started out in the General Assembly, which apparently is a pretty good training ground for corruption. We've had several people coming out of that. I mean, including John Rowland, our favorite punching bag. He was a state rep before he went to Congress.
Yeah.
But, he rose up through the ranks. He was hired, actually, during the Malloy administration, mm-hmm. but he eventually rose up during the Lamont administration to various titles, but one of his titles was being in charge of state involvement in school construction projects. And it's a very complicated thing. I know in Massachusetts, I'm pretty sure it's the same way in Connecticut, mm-hmm. but they have to, the contractors have to be certified to do these kinds of jobs with the state. So all of these contractors, so somebody in Diamantis's position wields a lot of authority over sure. these contractors, and he can make or break them. So, yeah, that's what allegedly he was shaking down contractors for money. He secured one of his, I believe it was his daughter, mm-hmm. a no-show job with one of the contractors while she was working in the state's attorney's office. I think it was a secretary or something like that.
Yeah.
So we had all of that, and it's really quite a mess. This guy is pretty brazen. And the thing is, I didn't even know this until today when I started looking at it more closely. He has hired perhaps the most famous or notorious, depending on your point of view, defense attorney in Connecticut, and that being Norman Pattis, who represented most recently Fotis Doulis, who was accused of having murdered his wife and covered it up and all of that stuff. He represents a lot of very unsympathetic clients, and he's very flamboyant. So this should be a very interesting case. Apparently, it did start today, and
yeah.
They've laid out some evidence. They did assemble a jury, and they're ready to go. But this is one of those cases, one of these local court cases that's going to be, I think, is going to be fun to watch. Lamont could be called as a witness,
which
would be very interesting. I don't know how, whether or not, I don't think he has anything to, Lamont's a lot of things.
Yeah.
I really don't see him as corrupt. he's an odd guy in some ways, but I really don't think that he's corrupt. He's got all the money he could possibly want anyway. What's he going to do, make a couple hundred thousand as a side hustle, helping somebody shake down contractors? I don't think so.
Yeah, but Terry, you and I both know, and we've covered politics on different levels for a long time, there's always going to be maybe within the Democratic Party, maybe from Republicans. Well, we're not accusing the governor of anything direct, wink, wink, but what does it say, Terry, when he's got this happening and the funny business with the overruns on the state pier and the Terrence Cheng thing about, buying wine and steaks and concert tickets with hard-earned money? I mean, you're right. You take a look at Ned Lamont, and he's like the least guy you would think who okays that. But do any of his competitors say, yeah, but this means he's checked out? I don't know. You and I have covered enough politics to know that, I wouldn't be surprised.
Even if you're not corrupt as a boss, and I see this happen on other levels out of government, even if the boss is not corrupt,
mm-hmm.
He might send a signal by what I would call lax supervision.
Yeah.
In other words, somebody who is hands-off and just doesn't pay a whole lot of attention,
yeah.
and therefore you might feel emboldened to engage in this kind of illegal behavior. That's certainly possible. I don't have a good sense of what Lamont is like, you know, to work for as a boss.
Mm-hmm.
It would be interesting to interview some people and find that out. Maybe that's a story idea for me.
All right. Before we get to the whole healthcare thing, and now they're saying, well, maybe the shutdown is coming to an end. Who knows? Speaking on the governor here, Terry, the University of New Hampshire survey that came out since the last time we spoke, he's got a 54% approval rating, which for this state is about right, I think. You know, 54, 46, whatever. But I found it interesting, Terry, that they also asked, should he run again? And only 43% said yes. And 40% said no. You've covered politics for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that should concern his camp? Should it embolden the Republicans? What do you think?
Yeah, I think that poll is actually good news for Republicans, because 54% is not a resounding yes in terms of approval ratings for the governor. And then, what did you say? Was it like 44?
43. 43% said he should run again. 40% said he shouldn't, and the rest are not sure.
That's got to be good news for Republicans. I think I'm sure that Ryan Fazio is probably sitting down, you know, somewhere, and he's got a big smile on his face.
Mm.
He probably thinks that this is good news for him. And certainly if I were running, I would think would be good news for me, because those are not great approvals for an incumbent governor.
Yeah.
But as we discussed before, third terms for politicians, third, fourth year terms, they rarely end well. Ask Andrew Cuomo. Ask Father Mario Cuomo.
Yeah.
Ask Michael Bloomberg. John Rowland.
Yeah.
You know, it just doesn't work very well, because people just get tired of you. So.
Yeah. Terry, in about the 60 seconds or so we have left in the segment here, what do you think? Now, obviously, the government shutdown will eventually get settled. This is always kabuki theater. Who comes out on top in this one, or you think there's equal blame to go around?
I'm old enough, and you are too, Paul, to remember the shutdown in 96, mm-hmm. 95, 96.
Yep.
And Newt Gingrich he was the Speaker of the House, he plowed ahead with the shutdown because he was convinced people would blame Bill Clinton, the president, and it wound up backfiring on him, and the Republicans, were blamed for the, according to poll anyway.
Yeah.
But this is really a lot of it's over these health care subsidies for Obamacare. And Democrats want to preserve health care for illegal aliens. And really what it is the illegal aliens will come into a hospital, and they're, by the way, if this bill doesn't pass, they're not going to stop coming into the hospitals, right?
Mm, yeah.
But if they come into the hospitals and they get treated in the emergency room, there is a program the federal government to reimburse the hospital for those costs. And so if they take away the reimbursements, the illegal aliens are still going to come to the hospital and demand care, and the hospitals by law have to give it to them.
Yeah.
So this is really a case of whether or not you're going to help keep hospitals afloat or not, because if the expenses go way up,
mm-hmm.
some of them are going to close,
absolutely.
Including maybe Sharon Hospital, which is in my immediate neighborhood.
Yeah. It's not easy. Read his stuff, folks. Terry Cowgill, Connecticut News Junkie, ctnewsjunkie.com, and substack.com. Red meat for those mushy moderates. Terry, thanks, buddy. Be good, and we'll chat next week, sir. Appreciate the time.
All right. Very good, Paul. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.